to make a great deal of the Gentile position during Acts. As I said before here this afternoon, is rather foolish because they were not being saved for their own sakes, but for Israel's sake. Now, you notice there that it said that God would take out people from among the Gentiles for his name. You find that in the 15th chapter of Acts. For his name. Well, it was Israel that was supposed to proclaim his name to the nations, the Gentiles. And yet here Israel has failed. And so God is going to set his name upon another people, a people who has not been a people, a foolish nation, so to speak. People that have not been counted as God's people at all. And yet, God had to be true to his promise made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And therefore, as long as the kingdom was open to Israel, he had to operate through Israel. And that is why that these folks were grafted in to Israel and given Israel promises and blessings, because God had not yet cast off it. Now, Paul made that plain and all, that they were not yet cast off. And so God was bound by his promise and by the plan that he had revealed up to that time, that all the Gentiles did in that time would have to be related in some way to Israel. Now, up until Acts, around the 9th chapter, from the time of getting the law of Sinai up to that time, if the Gentile wanted to partake of the blessings of Israel, he had to become a Jew. He had to be circumcised and keep the law. And of course, that is the reason why that there had a great division then during that time about this question, and why Peter separated himself on one occasion is just because of that dispute. A lot of the Israelites couldn't get it into their heads that God was saving Gentiles by grace. They argued from traditions and the practice of the past that Gentiles would still have to be circumcised and become an Israelite in order to take a Israel blessing. They had precedent in their favor. They had tradition in their favor. And they had God's word in their favor to a great extent. Because they could point to chapter and verse and say it says so. Because that's what the law said. But here was an upstart. You have the pamphlet, who then is Paul? Well, I can just imagine that's the way they said it back in those times. Well, who then is this Paul? He comes along and tries to tell folks these Gentiles that they don't have to become Jews in order to obtain the blessings of the day. Well, who's he? And the question got so hot that they had to settle it in the council down in Jerusalem. Now, I am of the opinion that this happened after the writing of the book to the Galatians, because this particular meeting and its results are not revealed in the book of Galatians. And certainly if it had taken place, the four Galatians, that Paul would have referred to as a proof in Galatians of what he was preaching. It would have been one of the finest things for him to have brought up if it had happened before that. Because that was the very thing he was arguing with these Galatians, was that the Gentile Christians did not have to be circumcised and keep the law. And I think I had that council's decision to add weight to his argument there, he certainly would have used it. And so that's the reason why I believe that Galatians were written before this council in Jerusalem in Acts 15. But that decision of the council certainly pushed things down for a while, that is in the immediate neighborhood at least. But when Paul went over into Europe, he still had the same question. And everywhere that he went, there were these Judaizers following along and saying to these Gentile converts, now listen to you folks. This man, Paul, doesn't know what he's talking about. And if you folks want to be sure that you're saved, you just got to be circumcised and some of you. And they come along, just like the Seventh-day Adventists will tell you today. You got to observe all the Sabbath, or you're just not saved. You have the mark of the beast if you observe Sunday. And so there it was. And they bothered him with that thing until in Rome. And after Israel was blinded, there at Rome, These falcons are getting whatever land is. They couldn't bother for anymore. And so he spoke in peace from then on. No man hindered. They were blinded. They couldn't do anything wrong. They just didn't have any argument. God saw that. Now, I don't know whether you've ever thought of that or not. The reason why that Paul was not bothered after that day there at all day conference, I'll answer that. Judicially, Israel set aside. They were blinded. And these men who have been causing all this trouble just simply didn't see anything to say anymore. They're out. God's Spirit is no longer working with them. And so Paul had perfect freedom from then on, as far as the Jews are concerned, to preach his gospel. There were none to hinder. If there was any opposition, it was simply from pagan sources, like the martyr Nero. And you can't find from that day on. You can search your church history. You can search all of our history. You can't find anywhere from that day on that the Jews, in those early centuries, ever bothered the, or even up till now, bothered the Christian worship. They just said that. And we're judicially blind to it. May help us to see some of the differences are between that. Now, after Acts, they see the Gentile came into full possession of these things. I have to watch my time back here. And on an entirely different plane than what he was before. Mr. Moore was reminding me that his father-in-law, Mr. Emmons, used to talk so much about that wall of partition being taken down. Well, that's true. Now, that was the thing that was between them. The main wall, part of the wall of partition was between the Jew and the Gentile during the actual circumcision. That was the one main thing that separated them. The observance of the Sabbath was another. And the observance of the law, any of those. And then when there was the actual wall of partition, went down the temple. Now there was Peter and Cornelius. Cornelius was saved. He and his family received the gifts of the Spirit. When Peter preached down in our house, they talked in tongues. They were baptized. But if Cornelius went down to the temple with Peter, he could go only to that wall. That's as far as Cornelius could go. Peter could walk on him.
Yes, there was a tradition that.
Yeah. And the Jew would go inside. The Gentile there or not. And if they put a Gentile in there, the temple would be closed right up. That's what they do. And they would have to cleanse that temple before they go in there. Now, there that man Peter, he went down to the house of Cornelius, made a convert of him, knowing full well there's still a war occasion. Peter wrote his epistle and passed off from this life. I doubt if he ever knew that someday Gentiles could enter into the Holy of Holies itself, which only the high priest ever dared to enter once and just once a year. That's the reason why I was stressing that Holy of Holies this afternoon there in Ephesians. The place into which the high priest could enter only once a year, typifying the heavenly, is a place to which the Gentile believers now of the dispensation ministry have free access, seated there with Christ. I say, if Peter never could have comprehended, I don't think so. He might have said, given in, somebody to argue with him someday, if the wall of partition didn't throw open down and he could enter into the holy place. Where the Jews were allowed to go for their sacrifice, where the brazen laver and the showbread and everything that pertained to baptism, the brazen laver, the baptism, the showbread, the Lord's Supper, and so on. Peter could probably see that someday maybe that wall would be broken down and Gentiles could go in there. But that the veil of the temple should be removed and that the Gentiles could go into the Holy of Holies with the great high priest, I think that would have been a little bit much for Peter. And yet, isn't that exactly what the truth is for them? Now, we can go on and on. There are a great many angles we can take up on that. I just want to give you a few as you might, as you read and as you think that you might find some of those and contrast, because we're all the time running across people who believe that the church began sometime during Acts. Maybe at chapter 2. Maybe at chapter 9. Maybe at chapter 13. Maybe at chapter 19. Or at 28. You see, there are several possibilities. By taking and magnifying one particular incident that happened, you can maybe think that there was a place of separation. But we have to be careful and remember that the actual separation was when God divorced his wife, Israel. And that is in that word, the word divorce is in that word depart in the last chapter of Acts. The translation is very unfortunate in our ordinary Bibles. I believe the Companion Bible gives you a note on that. It wasn't that they departed, but that he dismissed them. And the word dismissed there is just the same word as used when a man divorced his wife. And that was the end of Israel up until now. Now, since that olive tree was cut down, you can imagine the problem that came to the Gentile believers. They had been grafted in. They had been taught that they were receiving all their blessings through the promises made to Abraham, who is was a channel. Then they find this channel cut out of them. And the question would come up immediately, well, who are we? Where do we stand? What becomes of the branch that's grafted in if the tree is cut down? You see? And so Paul immediately had to begin teaching there in Jerusalem, or in Rome, telling these folks the new revelation, the new doing. There's no longer an olive tree, therefore it can be no longer a grafted branch receiving anything from them. And so now, instead of being blessed through faithful Abraham, they're blessed with all spiritual blessings in the heavenly in Christ. Correct. Without any reference whatsoever to promises made to Abraham. That's the reason why it's called the mystery of the seed. Abraham didn't know anything about it. God took him into his confidence and told him anything. You can take your signs of the zodiac. You can study all the constellations in the heavens and the message that they have for us concerning the redemption of mankind. But the secret isn't that. You can go through all of the Old Testament. You can take all of the New Testament. It's up in Paul's last seven epistles. It isn't that. The secret isn't that. So I think we should be mighty thankful to Paul and his faithfulness. I was just talking to a man a couple of days ago. And he said something about, well, it's a good thing maybe that we didn't know some of the things that were coming in our suffering. He was talking about the fact that the fellow worked with him. His father was in a nursing home, and his mother was in the hospital, and the fellow was out there and would see his mother, and he was pretty well worried and upset. And he said, well, maybe it's a good thing if we don't know all these things that's coming to us. And of course, it just gave me a chance, you know. And I said, well, there was one man that God considered to be faithful enough and have enough stoop in him that he could reveal to him at the beginning of his ministry all the things that are falling, and that was Paul. I said, I don't believe very many of us could take it. You know, it kind of hit him with a new idea. He says, well, I don't believe so either. Well, it's just a little chance to make a man think, didn't it? And so I left him with that. You know, you have to get in a word once in a while like that, and then just leave it there. Let it work. Then it'll firm me up or something after a while. Now, I think that that is about enough on that subject for tonight and before you go to sleep. Have to quit unless you have a question or an addition to what I've said here. Anybody have anything to say? A while back, I took my paper and Bible and sat down and started jotting down some of the things that I would put into a church discipline if I was writing up one for the Gentile church of the next period. The rules and the regulations, rather interesting, you know, when you think of some of these things. In the first place, they wouldn't dare to have any officers in their church or a minister or anything like that that wasn't a Jew. Because to the Jews pertain the services, you know. And they wouldn't dare to have anybody proclaiming the gospel out as evangelists or ministers or pastors or anything of that kind, because to them were given the oracles of God. It was in their possession. They were to take care of those things. And so on down the line, you know. And of course, you were not to try to start a group in any city in which there was no synagogue, because you always had to go to the Jew first. Well, that was very dangerous. So you could make up a discipline, you see, for that particular kind of a church. Well, churches which claim that they had a beginning at any time during Acts, excepting at the end of Acts, of course, just wouldn't want to conform to a set of rules made up from what was set down for that time. They want to change it. And yet they want to claim that. That was about it. It's like, I remember one time years ago, a man told me that his church began with the baptism of John the Baptist.
He's getting his church way back before Pentecost, before the time of Pentecost. Yeah, it began with the baptism of John the Baptist. Well, rather interesting.
But didn't you say this afternoon that the church and ministry were given evangelists?
Yes, over there in 4:11. Now we find that there were apostles and prophets. However, we don't find any succession of those. In other words, if whatever apostles there were besides Paul, and I'm not sure I could name any definitely besides Paul for that period, I'm just not too sure because we aren't told in so many words. And prophets of that time, just who they were, no, I don't know. But we have no indication whatsoever that those were carried on in any succession. However, teachers and pastors have gone on down the line, and possibly evangelists.
So that they do have their place.
Now, the reason why that I would say they went on down the line is because Paul told Timothy to hunt up men who were apt, you know, to teach and so on, and to pass the word on to them. That was a success. But here is the curious part of it. Paul claimed that he was not less than the least of the apostles during the Acts period. And yet, after Acts was over, he called himself less than the least of the saints. Paul had a position of authority during Acts. He could give a man's body over to Satan. But Satan killed him. Judicially. To teach that man not to blaspheme. After Acts, he couldn't do it. Paul had no higher position after Acts than the lowest believer in the dispensation of ministry. And he kept that. That's the reason why he said he was less than the least of the saints. No more authority. Simply given to him by a special dispensation of God to make known ministry. As far as any authority is concerned, he had none. And so that's the reason why he exhorted people to do things in his practical section and so on. He doesn't say, you do this or else, or you do that or else. He didn't do that. He had no authority. Nobody else had. All members aren't equal. I stand before you here to teach, but that doesn't give me any more rights than you have. And you have just as much rights to stand up here and teach as I have. So in the dispensation of the ministry, there are no hangles on the names, no titles of importance or anything of that kind of. It doesn't matter one bit.
So you thought that after all through talking.
I want you to understand that I'm not trying to make any authority myself.
Here we
go.
Tommy thought he was somebody. He thought he was up there because he had a right.
After all, I'm just Farmer Baker. That's all.
I'll accept that.
You have to, because that's what we're
heard of that.
Well,
I
don't know. You know, on TV they get an Oscar once a year, and he's been one of them.
That's one reason why, as the usual thing, I rather prefer to sit on the same level as those when I'm teaching, rather than to stand before them or occupy a pulpit above them or anything of that kind. I don't feel that I have any right to any such position whatsoever, or anybody else really has any right to such position, that people should look up to them particularly. Now, I don't like
that. I think it's smart enough, though.
Well, you don't know me like I know
you. Hope it stays that way, huh?
Well, if there are no further questions or discussion, I think that will sort of end our session. I think I'll turn the machine off before we have our dismissal.
Did
you have that one all our time? I think as the days go by, you folks have questions that come up, and maybe you can remember some of them now. It helps me a lot if I know what people are thinking about. I'm guided a great deal in my writing for the paper by questions that come up. People come in, they're visiting, people write, and so on, and the things that they're thinking about, the things that they're asking, help me a great deal to know just what is needed and what particular things to stress. When you sit back here in the study and you've been reading and studying out of the books and so on, why, you may get along to the place that you think you know what is needed, and then some of these questions come along and they say, well, I'm on the wrong angle altogether. Because something that may be plain, perfectly plain to me, may not be so plain to the next one. And so there's where the difficulties come. So we like to know what people are thinking about, and then we can give out the information that's needed. sometimes the articles in the paper may seem to be a little one-sided, maybe. And that's because, probably, that there have been questions coming up along those particular lines. Of course, as far as my articles on Ephesians are concerned, I'm following those along pretty steadily, and those aren't affected very much. And once in a while, we have another article or two that is continued. And in those, we try to, of course, keep on a line of exposition. Here is something else we do like to do. We like to make a balance as much as we can between doctrine and practice. And we hope that when we come finally to the fourth, fifth, and sixth chapters of Ephesians, that we'll keep on going and not stop as some have done. They got through the doctrinal section and then just let the practice go. And, of course, the practical section is just as important as the doctrinal section. And if we have a doctrine and then don't practice it, why, what use is it? So we want to watch that. Now, there are other aspects, too. The dispensational divisions all the time, we must make those clear. There is a certain amount of prophetic work that we must recognize and talk about occasionally. And so there's a number of aspects, as well as the fact that we have today two gospels to proclaim. The gospel of everlasting life is set forth in the gospel of John, and the gospel of the dispensation of the mystery is given forth by Paul in his prison epistle. So we have a double responsibility as far as the world is concerned.